Let me learn how to use it.
Alright, okay, it's working now. Alright, welcome guys. I'm really happy to see you all today. I'm glad that you can come for today's talk and I have a chance to talk about this topic. Actually, this is something that I've always been very, very interested in ever since I became a Christian. And actually, I've been looking for a chance to talk like this, and I'm really glad that today I have a chance to really share about what I've learned, especially since I came to university. So, just an introduction about myself and how I became a Christian. For most of my life, at least like until I was 20, I was an atheist. In fact, I was very sure that there was no God, and I used to argue with Christians in my school about like science and stuff. And because I was the science guy in my school, it was hard for them to know something about science that I didn't know about, and I would always win my arguments with them. And so like I used to have this belief that actually it's not that Christians are wrong or that scientists are right or the other way around, but that both of us have our own self-consistent theories about the world. So for instance, a scientist, we would have in our toolbox, you know, Newton's laws or Einstein's theory of relativity or quantum mechanics, and we have logic and stuff like that. And then we kind of build up a theory of what our world is like, and so far everything in our observation has kind of agreed with that. And every time something that doesn't agree with our theory comes out, we just come up with a new theory. So in a sense, our theories are self-consistent. They will never prove themselves wrong because science by itself, it's a ever-increasing piece of knowledge. And in the same way, I believe that religion is like that. People who are religious, they believe that there is a God, and when something bad happens, they will just say that God is there to punish them, and when something good happens, they'll say that God is there to bless them. So I believe that they'll never come to a stage where they'll think that there is no God. So I felt that, like our scientists, religious people, had their own self-consistent theories about the world, and so there's no point me arguing with them because we just belong to two different worlds of view. But in year 2000, I became a Christian, and after that, this part of me that's very intellectual was struggling with my Christian side a lot, and I always thought that, you know, perhaps I have to give up my intellectual self because somehow science does not seem to show that there is a God, and I struggled with that for a long time, and that also affected the way I prayed, the way I interacted with other Christians, the way I believed what was in the Bible and so on. And so when I came to college, my freshman year, I actually had a chance to find out more about it. As you guys know, there is this thing called Power, and you're allowed to use do any form of research you like. So I picked the topic Science and Religion, and at first when I picked this topic, I was kind of scared because I didn't know whether I was going to find something that will shake my faith so much that I will stop becoming a Christian, that I will lose my faith in God. So I was kind of scared, but I felt that actually if God is real, he will stand up to the intellectual test, and in the end he did. So today I just want to share about what I researched on for my Power, and I have thought about a lot of these issues since then. So a lot of this, the stuff that you see here, are actually new stuff from then. Okay, so I know I sent out an email to most of you with questions that people generally ask about science and religion, and just to start some thoughts thinking in your mind before I begin my presentation, I'll just read them out to you. So some popular questions people ask is, you know, if we can find a physical reason for things, why do Christians or religious people still say that it is God who's doing it? And if God is real, why can't we observe him? And if we can't observe him, doesn't it mean that he's not real? Science says that the world is random and deterministic. So if everything happens according to clockwork, how can there still be room for God to interfere in our lives? Okay. How can you have miracles and the laws of science existing side by side? Either one, if miracles are true, that means the laws of science are not real laws, but that they can be broken. Okay. Aren't religious experiences just a result of some electrochemical activities that are going on in the brain? Well, this thought is actually a very recent thought because like there were a lot of articles written in Time magazine about scientists finding a part of our brain that's involved with religious experiences. So actually, I will talk a bit more about this today. Okay. Why, if God is real, why doesn't he just speak to me now and show me that he's real and that he exists? Okay. And some Christians claim that science proves that God exists. Okay, if this is true, where are the scientific papers that say that? Why don't the scientific community accept this? And if science and religion really describe different parts of our lives, why do Christians say that God is everything? You know, like, if God is everything, doesn't God encompass science? And how does science and God interrelate in this area? Second last question. Why are Christians so stubborn about creation when evolution is clearly right? And lastly, didn't science prove that the Bible is wrong about dinosaurs and the age of the earth? Yeah, these are questions that I had when I was a non-Christian, and I felt that a lot of people, nobody could really answer these questions for me. And that was really what was stopping me from coming to know God. And so, if you look at all those questions, there are actually three very basic themes that are going on. And these three basic questions can be summarized as this. Firstly, there is no need for the God hypothesis. So, like, if you want to build out a theory of the world, you don't need an axiom that says that God exists to be able to prove anything else. You don't need the axiom that God is real to prove that an apple will drop when you let it go, or to show that rockets can fly to the moon, and so on. So why do you need? If there's no need for a God hypothesis, then why should we believe in God? And the second thing is that we cannot observe God, and if that's the case, God is just a figment of our mind. So whether you believe in it or not, it doesn't really matter. And the third one says that the world is random and is deterministic. Everything happens by chance. Nothing is there by purpose. And that it happens according to clockwork. So it's not because of God that things happen. It's because of the laws of science that things happen. Okay, these are the three main arguments against the existence of God. But actually, if you look at what science is, you see that science is about making hypotheses. It's about testing these hypotheses of observations. And it's about another important part of science is that the experimental results are reproducible. And we see that there's actually a very close correlation between these three parts of science and our three questions that we have about God. You see, the thing about making hypotheses is related to the our question that there's no need for a God hypothesis. And the fact that observations are very important in science correlates to the second one. And the fact that you need the world to be deterministic in order to do experiments correlates with our third belief that the world is indeed random and deterministic. And I must admit, these questions are really hard to answer. Okay, and the reason why they're hard to answer is because they're true and they're right. Okay, they're true and right. And why do I say that? We have to qualify them with more words. Okay. Yes, it is true that there is no need for the God hypothesis in science. Okay, we cannot observe God with experiments. And lastly, the world is random and deterministic in the laboratory. So let me go on to explain each of them, and see what the issues are really about. So for instance, our first one, there is no need for the God hypothesis in science. Okay, it's just as a mathematician, I think that it would be really horrible if one day someone proved that, decided to have the God axiom as the foundation of number theory. Okay, then in order to prove, like, say, the Cauchy-Schwarz inequality, you say, like, oh, because God exists, therefore the inequality is true. You know, it's just stupid to have something like the God hypothesis in science. Okay, so just because we shouldn't have the God hypothesis in science, it doesn't mean that the God hypothesis is not true in the real world in general, because science does not describe everything in the real world. Okay, for instance, one question that people like to ask is, if there's a physical reason for everything, then why do we still say that it's God? Okay, one thing is that my answer to that is that physical reasons can't explain everything. It can't explain timing. For instance, last year I had a bike accident where I had my eye badly cut and I went to the emergency room, and that cost me a lot of money because I had no medical insurance. And then in the end, some of my friends decided to help me out by donating some money. And one of my friends actually came out to me and said that God told her that she was gonna pay half of it, and another one quarter was gonna be paid by other people, and I myself only had to pay one quarter of the bill. And she said this before a lot of things happened, so I could think of physical reasons why she would say that, like, you know, maybe she, it was just numbers that popped to her mind. But after 3 months, after all the payments have been made, I look back at the amounts that were given to me, that, like, Joel and some people actually collected money. It really worked out to be half, one quarter, and one quarter. It was amazing. This would never have been explained by some kind of physical reason, because there was no collaboration between Joel and the girl who said that prophecy to me. So there are a lot of things out there which science cannot explain. There are physical reasons behind it, you know, like, you know, money is a physical thing, and the money could have come to me if people had if Joel had not collected it. But those reasons are not enough. And another question that that will come under this is that, you know, religious experiences are neural in nature. There's a part of our brain that's very active when we engage in worship or we engage in prayer. And does that mean that our faith is just some kind of electrochemical thing in our mind, that we don't need a God hypothesis to prove that's why we have these things? Just think about hearing, okay? Suppose scientists didn't know that we have these things called ears, but they just studied your mind, and they realized that certain times when you think of a person, say Wei Song is talking to me, okay? When Wei Song is talking to me, suddenly this part of my brain becomes very active. Does that mean that Wei Song is not a real person, but he's just a mass of electrochemical activities going on in my brain? No, he doesn't. Okay, so in the same way, that cannot be used to prove that, you know, God is just a figment of our mind, or it cannot be used to prove that God is real either. It can't be used to prove either way, but it does tell us something about how religious experiences are worked out in our brain, the processes that go on, and it's actually very interesting for us who have faith in God to know. Okay, and so this brings us to the next big point, that science is not the study of everything. Science is just the study of process. Just as we study, for instance, when we're praying, what goes on in our brain, science is the study of how this world works, what's the processes that go on in this world. Science cannot explain logic, nor can it explain purpose. For instance, you can't use an experiment to prove that the laws of logic are real. You know, until now, mathematicians have been trying to prove that, but Gödel has proved that, you know, that mathematicians have proved that it's impossible to prove logic is right. You just have to assume logic is right, that A implies B and B implies C means A implies C, and so on. Okay? And in fact, going on to purpose, okay, science cannot explain purpose. In fact, Bertrand Russell, a famous atheist, says that unless you assume a God, the question of life's purpose is meaningless. If you do not have God and you only have science, you cannot explain the purpose, the question of the meaning of life. Yeah, and I think I'm going to skip the last point. So this is how I would say this is a good way to see how science and religion interact in a certain sense. You see, science is really about the how things work in this world. But when we look at the whole world, we have to ask the question of why things happen. Well, a lot of the arguments between science and religion is not really about science and God, but it's really about people who believe this world is random and that everything happens by chance, and people who believe that there is a purpose in everything. Okay, there are a lot of people who are scientists who believe that this world has a purpose, that the laws of physics are not there by chance, that that we are here on Earth not by chance, but there was some kind of design to it. So there really isn't any conflict between these two parts, because this part can never be studied by science. The only part that can be studied by science is the how, and the question of why must always be left to something else. Okay, I will talk more about how we can answer this question of why, and in fact, science can help us know more about this area. Okay, so now I move on to the second big argument. We cannot observe God with experiments. Okay, I need to qualify this a bit. I don't mean that you can't ever do an experiment to see if God is there. Okay, what I mean is this. We can't use a telescope and look out into the sky and then hope to see like a man sitting on a cloud and say, oh look, God is there. Okay, because we have to think about the nature of God. You know, God, some of us think of God as being a person who's sitting in the sky. Some of us think of God as someone who you can say, okay, I want $1 million to appear in front of me right now, and then, you know, God will do that. When you do experiments like that to test God, you are actually assuming something about the nature of God, that God will listen to you, that God has a physical presence on the cloud right now. Okay. So that is why you can't just design experiments by your own choice to observe God, because the experiments that we do to find God has to be very specialized. Just as to look for an electron, you don't use a telescope or a microscope. You have to use very precise experiments, such as I shall not go into detail. Yeah. So, some people think that okay, when we talk about observing God, we also have to make a distinction between two different types of proofs about God. Okay, some people say, you know, why isn't there any scientific journal claiming the proof of God? First, when you talk about proof of God, what type of proof are you talking about? There are two types of proofs. One is a logical proof, and the second type is an evidential proof. A logical proof will be something that you do in mathematics all the time. An evidential proof will be something which you do in science, for instance, by doing experiments and so on. Okay. Bertrand Russell says that, I do not think there is a conclusive argument by which one can prove there is not a God. So he's saying that there's no logical proof that God does not exist. Nor is there, and I think you can also similarly speculate that there is no logical proof to say that God exists. Okay? In fact, this understanding about the two different types of proofs will help us to understand a lot of the questions that people ask nowadays about God. You see, some people will say that, you know, there's suffering in this world, how can there be a God? What they're trying to, the argument they're trying to make there is actually a logical argument. They're trying to argue that God and suffering do not go together. But you see that argument is based on a flawed understanding of what God is like and what suffering means to God and so on and so forth. So this will be a logical type of argument. Whereas things like evolution, they will be more evidential, because we can actually look back on the history of man, history of the earth, and so on and so forth, and know if, you know, those are true and so on, find evidence for it. So that's more of an evidential type of argument. And so a natural argument for, okay, so we know that we can't do a logical proof of God. So what about evidential proof? Can we have evidential proof of God? What constitutes as evidence of God? And where can we find evidence of God? I'm quoting Bertrand Russell a lot today, tonight. Yeah, he actually says that someone actually asked him, you know, he was a well-known atheist at the time, and someone actually asked him, what would make you believe that God is true, that God is real? He said, I think that if I heard a voice from the sky predicting all that was going to happen to me during the next 24 hours, including events that would have seemed highly improbable, and if all of these events then produced to happen, I might perhaps be convinced at least of the existence of some superhuman intelligence. Okay, some people think that evidence of God is just about improbable events. So for instance, if I took a coin and I flipped it 100 times right now, and every one of those 100 times it lands on its edge, therefore I prove that God exists. No, God is not about an improbable event. Just as miracles are not just about improbable events, there's something more to it than just the improbability of the event. Evidence of God will be improbable events occurring seemingly under intelligent guidance. The aspect of intelligent guidance is very important here. Okay, that is why when we talk about miracles, it's not about like something that's very improbable happening. It's because of something improbable happening, and in a way that it affects your life in a very crucial way, that is why we call it a miracle. For instance, you're running away from a gang of people who are trying to take your life, and you ask God to save you, and suddenly, like, an avalanche comes down and, like, buries them or something. You know, like, just at that moment, you know, the fact that the avalanche happened, that by itself is not improbable, but the fact that it happened at the point of time when you needed it most, that makes it a miracle, and that makes it evidence of God. Okay, so this is what I would define as evidence of God, looking for improbable events occurring under intelligent seemingly under intelligent guidance. And there's a word for it, it's called purpose. Okay, and so the next natural question is, where can we find evidence of God? Oh, there are many, many areas. I'm just going to talk briefly about each of them, and there's actually a lot of literature out there. I think the best evidence of God, by my own judgment, to me, the best evidence of God is the study of Jesus' resurrection. Okay, the Bible claims that Jesus' resurrection was a real event, and therefore we can actually go back in as historians to see if this event really happened, and what do the ancient texts say about it? What does the Bible say about it, and what are the witnesses around the time? What do they say about it, and so on? So there is a lot of research in this area, and you'll be amazed to know how much historians out there accept the fact that Jesus was a real person, and that he died, and that his tomb was empty, as a truth of life. Okay, it has been proven way beyond doubt that these things really did happen. But what people are not, historians argue over right now, is why the tomb was empty. They'll argue whether, you know, the tomb was empty because someone stole the body, or whether he really resurrected, and so on. That's the thing that historians are arguing about now. But no, few people will argue that the tomb was not empty, or that Jesus was not a real person. Okay, another important evidence of God would be the authenticity of the Bible. Okay, I don't really, I think these words are not very appropriate here. Authenticity of the Bible as a historical text. How real it is, whether it was changed over the ages, whether they were written by real people, you know, how much of it is written to promote someone as a divine figure, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of study out there, and you'll find that the Bible turns out to be a very good source, historical source. And you can also verify historical events in the Bible. For instance, like some archaeologists actually went to this place where the Bible said there was a group of people called the Hittites, and they actually did find that these people are real, despite 200 years of thinking that, you know, these people never existed. We can also look at miracles happening around the world today. For instance, like I've read a story about a guy who was in Africa, and he actually died, and he was in the hospital, and there were eyewitness events of how this guy came, and they prayed for him, and he later rose back to life again. Okay, so there are stories like these, and of course we have to take it with a pinch of salt. We don't know whether they're true, but this will count as evidence, and therefore we have to go out and explore and see whether they're real or not. And then there are miracles in our own lives, and also the fine-tuning of the universal parameters for life. Okay, what I mean by this is this. For instance, like some of the people who have been studying cosmology have realized that if the fundamental constants of physics were different by a small little bit, a lot of the planets that we see around right now would not exist. The universe would not be the size that it is right now. Gravity will not be the same right strength right now. And a lot of other constants would have made it impossible for life to exist. So it seems that the constants of physics are so finely tuned for life to exist on Earth. And similarly, in the theory of evolution, they found that a lot of things have happened by chance in history in such a way that as to lead to a production of life right now. Even Richard Dawkins, a famous atheist, says that, you know, the theory of evolution is incomplete because it's unable to explain how these chances come about. And they need to explain away these coincidences which are happening in the theory of evolution. So this is another possible source of evidence for God. But whether you think that's a good source of evidence, that's a different story. Personally, I don't think this is a very good source of evidence, but rather we have to look at something that's more credible and easier to investigate, which is whether this person called Jesus was a real person, and whether he really did resurrect himself as he claimed. So, okay, that brings me to my last argument. The world is random and deterministic in the laboratory. Okay, why do I say in the laboratory? Just as I said, when you do experiments, you need to have results which are repeatable and results which are reproducible. So in the laboratory, you really do need the world to be predictable and deterministic. That once you do thing A, it must lead to thing B. Okay, and you need randomness too. Before you can say that, oh, you know, I have a good spread of results to give me a good idea of whether a theory is true in general. And so, this notion of randomness and determinism is actually very important in evolution and the question of evolution and creation. Okay, and I actually want to talk about that. But before I go to that, here's an interesting historical side note. Okay, if you go back to the 13th century, way before people discovered that the universe started off with the Big Bang, people used to think that the universe was here today, it has always been like that for millions and trillions of years and has never ever changed. So for instance, they didn't believe that there was a beginning of the universe, that the universe was static, that it has never changed. But Thomas Aquinas, he was a famous philosopher of the time, actually a Christian philosopher. He believed that the Bible was true, and when the Bible said that there was a beginning, he believed that the universe had a beginning and he had a start. And he was trying to argue with the scientists of that time, but the scientists said, look at the world around us, it is static, you know, the Bible is wrong. So 700 years later, we realized that, you know, the Bible had been right about there being a beginning in of the universe. And so, but yet, it shows that there's still a lot we do not know about our world in terms of science, and we cannot assume that science is always right, nor can we, So we have to take a lot of things we hear in science with a pinch of salt. Yeah. And let me go on to this issue of evolution and creation. Okay. This is actually a very big topic. I'm not gonna talk about it today, in detail, but I'm gonna help you understand what the crux of the issue really is about. There are actually two arguments going on in evolution and creation. One argument that's going on right now is between the scientists, the people of the how. There are scientists who believe that animals on Earth were instantly created the way they were today. That there was no process by which they started from the bacteria and became what they are today. But they just, you know, that even if they did appear, it was by spurts of this designer type evolution and so on. And there, of course, there are people who believe in there being some kind of continuous process by which the animals or the creatures became more and more complex. Okay, this argument is between the scientists, but there is another argument on the more of a biological side of whether these things here were they guided by randomness or were they guided by purpose. Okay, it is hard for us to imagine that, you know, instant design can actually be affected by randomness. Okay, but this is what the people in the 1300s believe. They believe that the world was static, that it's just the way it is right now, forever and ever, and many, many years back too. It was not difficult for them to imagine that everything was designed, but there wasn't a purpose behind it. It was just the way things were. Okay, so that's an example of randomness and instant design. And of course, we have the people who don't believe in, the scientists who do not believe in God but believe in evolution, they will believe in continuous development and randomness. And then we have the intelligent design people who believe in instant design and there being a purpose. And there are also a lot of Christian scientists out there who believe in evolution and purpose at the same time. So when someone is trying to talk to you about evolution and creation, you have to be clear and you ask them about, so what are you really trying to argue? What are you really trying to talk about? In this area, science has not, a large part of the scientific community is fairly convinced about continuous development, but there is no full or complete proof that this is true. There's still some kind of space for argument between the two. So personally, myself, I can't say that I totally root for this, but I root for somewhere in between, and I say that, you know, I really am not sure. I will be as sure as the scientific community is sure that they have evidence for these things. Okay, this is where I stand in terms of here. But in terms of here, I stand here. I stand to say that however God did it, it was always a purpose and it was not random. That we are the way we are today because God created us this way. And so it is difficult to So that's about the evolution and creation part. Can you go back to the previous slide? Okay. Now the next question I want to answer is, don't miracles break the law, means that the laws of science have been broken? Actually, it's not true that every time you have a miracle, the laws of science are broken. For instance, if you look at the part in the Bible about the parting of the Red Sea, you realize that it talks about strong winds coming from the east and forcing down on the water, causing the water to split. So, I believe that miracles happen within the confines of the laws of physics. That God uses things in this world, like, for instance, strong winds and stuff, to effect what he wants to happen. Okay, for instance, when you read the part about Ezekiel and the sacrifice, that he was telling the people to make, where they had two sacrifices, a bull for the Baal worshippers and another bull for the people who worship the true and only God. Then fire came down from the sky and lit up the sacrifice for the bull. You know, that could have been like a comet or something like that. I don't know. But I believe that, you know, things don't happen outside of the confines of laws and science. Miracles can happen within the laws of science. But the thing we need to ask is the purpose behind it. They are miracles not because they are improbable or because they break the laws of science. They are a miracle because they happen when they needed to and because there's a purpose behind it. Okay. And lastly, I want to talk about okay, I think I'm gonna skip that part. Okay. Yeah. Just now I talked about determinism and randomness. Okay. We talked about how can God intervene in this world if there is determinism, if everything happens according to clockwork. You know, with quantum mechanics, those who know quantum mechanics well enough knows that, you know, given the total configuration of the world right now, you can't predict with 100% accuracy about what's going to happen the next second, because there is probability involved. Okay, so this world doesn't happen according to clockwork. There's some kind of choice that happens as to what kind of events can happen next. Though on the macro scale, there may not be a lot of choice, but still, such choices are possible, and it is through such choices, I believe, that God can still intervene, and God can cause things to happen in ways that we cannot imagine. And in, you know, He can cause things to happen since the very beginning age of time, so that something will happen today. You know, that's how non-deterministic this world can be, and that allows God to intervene. And second thing is this: some people claim that, you know, science has proven that the world is random. Okay, that through all the observations of our world, the world is obviously random. That things don't happen by purpose, but by chance. But there was actually I don't think this is a very well known article, but a mathematician once actually said that it's impossible to prove that something is random. Okay, if I give you a list of numbers, they may look like extremely random numbers to you, but maybe it turns out that they are just the square roots of, you know, like some sequence of very fixed numbers with a pattern. So for instance, randomness to us just means that we can't see the pattern. Okay, just because you look at a list of numbers and they look random doesn't mean that they're actually random. There might be a pattern behind it. You can't actually prove that something is random, because maybe it's just that you're not smart enough to see the pattern behind the numbers. So when people tell you that science has proven the world is random, that's not true, because how can you prove that anything is random at all? Okay, it's impossible to prove that things are random, logically, but of course, evidentially, that's another issue. But we'll talk about this in a while. And actually, go on the next one. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is what I was talking about. Okay. We looked at how science is about how things work. Okay. There's still the question of why things happen, and it seems to us right now that really there's no way to answer the question of why. But there is a lot of ways we can answer the question of why. Previously, I talked about, you know, is there a purpose behind the world? Is God real? What is the evidence of God? And we talked about historicity of Jesus' resurrection. We talked about the validity of the Bible. We talked about miracles in the world. So those actually are evidential proof of purpose in the world. Similarly, we can find evidential proof of randomness in the world. In fact, that's what science has been trying to do for a very, very long time. Okay? But so far, it seems like every time they try to go down a certain track to look for randomness, it turns out that there was more pattern in it than they expected to see. For instance, we talked about evolution. When evolution first came out, people were hoping that it could be used to prove that the world is random, that animals came about because of some random process. But the more they studied evolution, the more they realized that there was so much coincidences that were happening in the history of evolution that what happened to the original randomness that we hope to prove? You know, there has been a lot. I would say personally that there's very little evidential proof for evidence, but there's a lot of evidential proof for purpose in this world. And so, in fact, when you're trying to share with people about these evidential proofs, do not make your arguments one-sided by saying that, you know, all the evidence is for purpose, but it's impossible to prove that randomness is true. It is possible to prove that randomness is true, but so far there's not been very good evidential proof of randomness in this world. Okay? Yeah. So far, do you guys have any questions about things that I've talked about? Just clarify any points. Okay, and then this brings me to my last point. Okay, usually after talking to a friend about these issues, about science and religion, they will say, you know, the consistency between science and religion still does not convince me that God is real. And in fact, that's what you should expect. It's impossible, just because, you know, scientific evidence is consistent with the fact that there is a God, doesn't mean that people should come to faith because of it. In fact, if I had been a non-Christian and you showed this to me, I would just say, oh, well, that's interesting, but I wouldn't just believe in God because of that. In fact, our faith in Christ really comes more from these two areas. This is by, you know, you just think about your own personal life, those who are Christians, and you realize that a lot of your faith in God really comes from your own personal experience, of experiencing God in your own life, and also knowing how Christ and his resurrection was a true event, and that's why you place so much faith in the fact that, you know, he did what he promised to do, he would do. For instance, Paul in the Bible says that, you know, if Christ's resurrection was not real, then all our efforts have been in vain. Okay, we should just you know, eat and feast and be merry tomorrow, because we shall die and nothing is going to happen after that. So these two things are actually the more important aspects of our faith to help us understand this part of our faith. Okay, but I think for me it was comforting to know that I came to faith because of these two parts, and it was good to know that, you know, these two parts were also in correlation, that I wasn't intellectually dishonest by saying that I should just ignore this part and only look at these two parts. Yeah. And so let me just kind of summarize the key ideas that we used in discussing the arguments between science and religion. Firstly, science is about the process, about the how. But when you're talking about God, you really need to talk about purpose. If you don't talk about purpose, you can't really talk about God at all. And second, the thing about the arguments is not about whether it's true or false, but how true they are and how false they are. What part of it is true and what part of it is false? For instance, when I said, you know, there's no need for a God hypothesis, but that is true in the sense that you don't need a God hypothesis in science. But it is false if you try to say that there's no need for a God hypothesis in the whole world, because we can't explain logic without just having science. We can't explain purpose just having science. The thing is, do not mix scientific philosophy with life philosophy. There's a tendency for us to take what we have seen in the laboratories and assume that happens in the whole world as well, in our lives. For instance, the fact that the world is random and deterministic. You can't just say that, oh, because that's true in the laboratory, it has to be true in our lives, that everything is random, that there's no meaning, and that everything is predictable and clockwork. Okay, lastly, it's very important to realize this, that the arguments that I talked about right today, they remove bias that people have against God, but they rarely lead people to faith. They should not be, you know, when you share this with people, you should share it with the intent of helping people to understand that, you know, you're not being intellectually dishonest if you become a Christian, but you should understand that, you know, that's not going to make them a Christian. It takes a lot more to make someone a Christian. It takes God to make someone a Christian. It takes God to speak to them. And so, lastly, some common sense things that you should know when you're sharing with your friend. Okay, firstly, know the reasons for your faith. Okay, sometimes we think that we know why we believe in something until a really bad event happens in our life and we are crushed. For instance, when I was doing my project on science religion, there came a point when I was reading about the religious experiences in the brain thing, and I became so convinced that the article was right, that, you know, there's no God, that everything is just in my brain, that I just realized that, you know, I can't call myself a Christian anymore, because I realized that it's just a product of my brain. And the reason why I crumbled under it is because I didn't understand the reason for my faith. At that point of time, the reason for my faith was my religious personal experiences. That because my faith was so hinged on my personal experience, when my personal experiences were attacked, there's no more reason for me to believe anymore. But when I realized that I had to put my faith not on my experiences but on Christ himself, then my faith became strong, because I no longer depended on my emotions and on my experiences. So know the reasons for your faith. Second, you do not know everything. okay, there's bound to be someone out there who knows more science than you, who knows more about philosophy than you, who can argue better than you. But you just need to share what you know, because there might be things that the other person does not know. And third, there's no magic formula. You don't go around saying that, you know, God is about purpose, science is about process, and hope that by saying that it will solve everyone's questions about science and religion. Okay, each question by itself is unique. There are many facets that I did not answer today, but you shouldn't assume that everything can be answered by the same thing. Fourth, know your friend's doubts. Okay. Fifth, learn from your friend. There are a lot of things you can learn from your friend by talking to them about it. Things about science, things about evolution, things about philosophy. Sixth, it's very important to ask the right question. You know, sometimes people ask, is evolution right or is creation right? That's not the right question to ask. The right question to ask is, what are you really arguing about? Are you arguing about, you know, randomness versus purpose, or are you arguing about design versus evolution? Okay. Seven, do not argue from refutation. Actually, today I was sharing with Bob that when I was non-Christian, my friend used to bring me to his Bible studies, and then there was this guy who was doing, like, he was a math graduate student or a PhD student or something, and then he said, you know, I know what you're thinking of. He knew I was a math guy, so he said, I know what you're thinking of right now. I know what arguments you have in your brain. I've been through that, so just trust me, God is real. So he was arguing from his reputation as a smart person. But that's not the way to talk to people. You know, you don't just say, you know, trust me, I know. I've been through what you've been through. Okay? 8, do not look down on your friends. Do not assume that they don't believe in God because they haven't thought enough about it. There are a lot of people out there who don't believe in God, and they have thought a lot about these issues. And, yeah, so don't assume they haven't thought about these issues. 9, be straightforward, not tricky. You know, don't try to, like, lead people to an argument about God and say something like, oh, you know, let's say you're talking about evolution, and then you just, like, ask very strange, weird questions trying to lead people to admit that he believes that there's a purpose behind it. Don't do that. Just tell them, I want to tell you about this, and they will appreciate that a lot more than you being cheeky. 10, faith is more than just reason. Just because you can reason everything out doesn't mean that the other person will have faith. Okay, the last three are very important. Our work here is just to plant and to water, but God is the one who causes growth. When we share something with someone, that's not the thing that changes people. What really changes people is God using what you've shared to change them. 12, pray for opportunity and wisdom to share. And 13, it's really about investing time into relationships, being a friend to them, loving them, helping them when they need, rather than, you know, trying to come up with very smart arguments. Right. And lastly, my study of science and religion has really helped me in many ways of my own spiritual life as well. Well, firstly, in the area of Thanksgiving, I realized that God, you know, just because I can find a physical reason behind things, doesn't mean that God is not there. In fact, it helps me to appreciate the process even more, that God did put those physical things in my life to help me. And so that helped me be more thankful to God for the things in my life. For instance, the fact that I'm able to come here to Stanford, you know, it's because my parents, they brought me up, they taught me good values and so on. But that doesn't mean that God wasn't in it. It made me even more thankful to God for my parents and for the opportunity to come here. Second, prayer. Okay, some people think that it's useless to pray. Since things are set down since the beginning of time, if God knows what's going to happen, He'll make it happen. But that's not true. Paul says, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. If we do not pray, how can we expect God to move? And of course, James 4:2, if you do not have because you do not ask God. Prayer changes things in a way that the laws of science cannot understand, or science can never understand. Okay. And lastly, for me, the most important is talking with God. Sometimes when I first started out with prayer, I felt that I was just talking to myself. My thoughts are just bouncing off each other, and I'm just having a dialogue in my own head when I'm talking to God. But the more I realized that, by studying science religion, I realized that God uses those things. You know, God uses these physical things in our head to speak to us. And even though initially when you talk to God, you know, you're trying to have a conversation with Him in your mind, it feels as though you're talking to yourself, but you should really try to persevere, because one day you realize that you really are talking to someone who's different, someone who has a different intelligence from you, someone who has different wisdom from you. And so, yeah, this is what I've gained out of it. And let me just end off with some quotes. Okay, Paul says, "I'm here to introduce you to this God so you can worship intelligently and know who you're dealing with." And "Religion without science might be blind, but science without religion is lame." Einstein. And my favorite, from Paul Yeah, Soviet mathematician, "We know that nature is described by the best of all possible mathematics because God created it." Okay. Right. And if you want more information, you can go to my website, which is listed above. And lastly, just want to let you guys know about this thing called the Veritas Forum, which is coming up 1st to 5th of May. It is this forum where they talked about, you know, creation and evolution, intelligent design, and answers a lot of other philosophical questions we raised tonight as well. So if you're interested, you can find out more information about the talks which are going on and so on from me. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.